It's 5 o'clock on the most listened to sports talk show for your ride home.
What?
It is time for
the Falcons Report.
Whoa!
Guns it. Caught. Touchdown Atlanta in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown.
You shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons Report.
Oh, my heavens.
On Dukes and Bell.
We are Dukes and Bell. Carl is off today, but we've had some regular customers in here, some new faces, too, at the Hooters Mall of Georgia. Our residency continues with Chris Chertle-Thomas. You guys can join in. We start every hour of the show by saying,
hey, man.
That's what I'd like to hear. That's leadership right there. We got my man over here. By the way, I would tell everybody I'm Brian Jordan if I were you. Make that work. That's what I would do. I'd be like, hey, girls, maybe you saw me with the Falcons. I'd run with it. I'd totally run with that. I used to get like, you look like the fat Chandler from Friends. I'm like, I am him. You know, so make it work. Hi, everybody. We're hanging out here. Saw camp today, and it was a physical day, man. Pads were popping.
Yeah.
Just like Gwinnett. Gwinnett is popping.
Gwinnett is popping.
And the pads were popping. Arthur Blank spoke with the media today. And, again, we have not had a chance to speak with Arthur in a while. Let's start with what happened when they drafted Michael Penix, because at the time there was a lot of miscommunication. Certainly it looked like Kirk Cousins and his representation was totally blindsided by us taking Penix at 8. Here's Arthur on where they stand with Kirk.
Again, I think the important thing is that Kirk, I think, understands that now. Michael understands it. They share a suite. They've been great suite mates. They've been great on the field together, and Michael is learning a lot from Kirk, and he will for a long period of time. And most importantly, Kirk is healthy and providing us with the kind of leadership and the kind of play that we can see so far that we invested in him.
I know that when we saw that decision, and look, I'm not going to re-argue it or rehash it. It is what it is. I just felt that it came from either Arthur Blank or just Terry believed, either way, we're never going to be in that hell of not having a quarterback. We've gone through 2 years in the weeds. So even though the rest of the NFL would say, draft Penix, if you believe that's the guy, spend your free agent money on defense, which we still have needs, edge rush and corner. Whether they get addressed in the scheme and then we've got the right players, time will tell. But right now, we still have some questions about those positions. If you love the guy, just do it. The Cousins thing to me is if you do Cousins, then try to trade. What's harder is trading out of that 8th pick because nobody saw Leia Latu or, you know, all the other guys that we kept going around
Turner,
and around about.
Yeah.
Dallas Turner with Alabama, Jared Verse from Florida as being worthy of the 8th overall pick. I just go with, look, no one was going to beat you to Penix. The Raiders are the only guy that had Penix high on the board. I love Penix. And by the way, Penix has looked freaking great. You know, he's going to make rookie mistakes. Sometimes he's going to overthrow. Maybe sometimes too many RPMs. But if you've been to Falcons practice, and I know that the fans haven't got the opportunity this year, and Arthur talks about that too. Chris, just talk about how amazing Penix's throws look.
Yeah, he's, again, I keep joking around that he has a rocket launcher attached to his left shoulder, but it's kind of true, honestly. I mean, even compared to Kirk himself, you can really see the difference in just how much he can spin it. And, I mean, especially compared to Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder, I mean, it's a night and day difference. But what is most impressive to me about Penix is he's going up there. So basically the way that it works, I know you guys can't see it because you're not there. They do like three reps, two reps, two reps. They rotate the quarterbacks in and out. And when Penix is under center, you feel the same sort of presence and command as when Kirk is in there, and then he can deliver the ball.
It is kind of neat watching Penix. You know, here's a rookie quarterback in camp, and he's using his cadence. We had two or three defensive linemen jump off sides in practice and real like conditions with NFL refs. So, yeah, five-yard penalty. That's, you know, good to see. Then we saw Kirk Cousins throw a pick to Jesse Bates today. Later found out that Darnell Mooney, my bad, that's on me.
Yep.
He's supposed to pull in the route one way or the other. Jesse Bates saw it and took it to the house. So again, if you don't know, because I always ask Arch, is that on the quarterback? Is that on? And I asked Arch, is that on the quarterback? Arch was out, he's grumpy today. But anyway, apparently it was Darnell Mooney screwing up the route. Back to Arthur Blank. I say Arthur's a meddler, a lovable meddler. I think if I own the team, I'd probably meddle too. I think Arthur said, we can never be in this quarterback hell again. Let's get two. He says decisions are not cleared by me.
Okay, I'm being real clear on my words now. So they make me fully aware. They don't have to clear it with me. They just have to make me aware of what's going on. So I don't like surprises. They know that. But it's not up for me to make those decisions. It's up for them to make those decisions and me to understand the logic behind it. So I'm very sensitive on behalf of our fan base, everybody connected to the franchise, on not having a period of time post-Kirk Cousins, however long that may be, God willing, a long period of time, to having a gap again between having that kind of franchise quarterback and being in a spin cycle of a washing machine and not being able to get out with not having that player.
Okay. Tell me you need final approval of a decision without telling me you need final approval of a decision. Because when you say the one sentence there, Mike, I don't like surprises,
right,
that says everything you need to
right.
know.
So he knew
right
that
there.
They were going with Penix Jr. Like, again, does it really truly matter that maybe we're not being 100%, you know, truthful in this? I don't know. Like, I'm used to having people kind of, you know, massage the truth or kind of, you know.
Shape the narrative.
Shape the narrative is the phrase. Arthur, I think, never, ever wants to be in his remaining years as Falcons owner in that hell we were in the last two. Which, again, 7-10, moderate quarterback play. Derek Carr, you know, Jacoby Brissett, and you're in the playoffs.
Yep.
But we couldn't even pull that off. So we decided to go with Penix. And Penix, he says, the staff said it was the best option.
Yeah, I just feel like at the end of the day, Mike, when it comes down to it, Arthur knows what the 2016 season took out of the fan base. And since then, nothing's been the same.
Right.
So you're trying to get back that feeling of when the franchise was rocking and rolling on a year-in and year-out basis. And I think for the first time in a long time, we saw him sort of put his foot down and say, enough is enough. No, 7-10. Yes, we made chicken salad out of chicken
right.
blank. But at the same time, Mike, that's nowhere near good enough.
No, 21 was the cap hell. We finally came forward out of that, the cap situation. And last year was the last sort of part of that. Now moving forward, we got money to spend. We spent it on Cousins. I just said, look, one or the other. If you believe Penix is the guy, draft Penix. Spend the money on established edge rush and established corners, and live with it, and have faith in your football people. Look, Terry Fontenot, we had that discussion after the draft. Terry looks and talks about Michael Penix Jr. that day like the way you would talk about your wife.
Yeah.
You know, on your wedding day. So the die was cast. Then live with it. Live with it. Don't waste the money on Cousins. Just go spend on established defensive players, especially in a year where there wasn't anybody taken defensively until, what, the 15th, 16th pick?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Anyway, one more from Arthur Blank. He says he's aware of draft strategy. He says, but decision-making is, in fact, left to the experts.
I follow very closely. I mean, I'm involved in the sharing of the strategy behind, our draft approach. We go through a number of scenarios. I'm in a number of pre-draft meetings where they're screening potentially who might pick and what position and why. Then there's a bunch of options. Obviously, we're one of 32 teams picking, so anything can happen. And during that night, it did fall our way in terms of Michael. But it's a decision made by the coaching staff and by the personnel department, and that's the way it should be.
Okay. Look, now we're on with it. The good news is Michael Penix looks great. With Kirk Cousins already telling the media he's not going to play in preseason, can't wait to see Penix. And I really can't wait for the fans to see Penix Jr. because I know everybody was excited. I'm excited. I'd rather just see him out there starting now. But, again, you didn't pay Kirk Cousins $45, and $10 million to not start. He's the starter. He's going to take a minute with the Achilles. Still looks okay out there. But if I'm honest, yes, he looks like Matt Ryan out there as far as the velocity versus what Penix is doing. That's just my opinion. If you were there, you could see it. Arthur Blank apologized to the fans that the construction continues. Next year, fans will be able to be at practice. Mercedes-Benz guys, we're going to be there on Friday. We'll be on one of those suites, Fieldside.
Yeah, 6 to 8 is the practice.
You can go to the Falcons website, get the link. It goes and helps out Emory Healthcare. It's $5 to charity. It's a great event, and look forward to seeing this place packed, which brings us to the next point, and that's something that made the rounds earlier today. Amon-Ra St. Brown, a big-time receiver for the Lions, goes on a podcast, and he was asked about the places and the people he doesn't like to play against. Take a listen.
I hate the Packers fans just because it's Green Bay. I play for Detroit, but I think some of the worst fans was the Falcons.
Really?
When we played them my rookie year, no one was there. Terrible. I'm like, yo.
Oh, so you're looking at it as far as support
right.
toward their team.
Right.
Okay.
Because I hate Green Bay. Their fans, I mean, they have good fans for the team, but
yeah.
I hate them.
Right.
But I don't know. Is there that much to do in Atlanta? I don't know. Because ain't nobody going to the game.
Okay, guys. There's Amon-Ra St. Brown saying we're the worst fans. Nobody was at the game. In December 26th, 2021. Just to give you a little, again, every argument, everything, we got to have a little bit of context here.
Yep.
Day after Christmas, no Julio Jones. That's when Calvin Ridley quit, later found out he had some issues off the field. There's a reason why. We're also 6-8 going into that game the day after Christmas against a pretty mediocre Lions team. Thus, nobody there. When I say nobody, usual late December crowd the last few years, about 45, 50,000 people.
Yeah, here's the thing.
Which is exactly what Detroit was until they got good.
Yeah, here's the thing, Mike.
Diehard Detroit fans, we have diehard Falcon fans, but they weren't packing in Ford Field when they're terrible.
No, and if you can come out and say with a straight face that Atlanta has nothing going on as a city, then you obviously have no idea what the heck you're talking right. about.
Look, I know his kids were raised like a veal in a box, you know, lifting and catching footballs, but I mean, yeah, how do you not know that this is the A? Yeah, a little perspective. Either way, that was getting people a little fired up. Bringing it back to Arthur Blank. Arthur Blank does feel positive about us making the playoffs. Arthur Blank at this stage of his career is not going to guarantee anything, but certainly this team is supposed to win 10 games to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you don't, it's a massive failure this season for obvious reasons. You can't pay Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed. You can't have another wasted year of Bijan Robinson, right. Drake London, Kyle Pitts. All those guys are going to need to get paid eventually. You're going to have to make some tough decisions. And Mike, they are the best team in the division. It's not a question to me. Right. They are, simply put, the best team. They should win.
Bucks still got some good receivers and a decent defense. I know they kind of ran back the same squad. We'll talk. We got plenty of weeks to talk about that. This hour of the show brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Hey, man, we're live at Hooters Mall of Georgia. I heard Jerome chirping. We were talking about Atlanta attendance. One thing that's fun, if you go to a Cowboys game, you can always get tickets. I've seen 25,000 Giants fans take over Jerry World. There's always plenty of seats available to go to a Cowboys game. Yes, Jerome, you can't afford to go to a Cowboys game anyway. We'll come back. What's going on with the trade deadline? What's going on with the Braves? Man. We got less than an hour to see if we're going to roster. Right now, we brought back Jorge Soler.
Yay.
If we could get a time machine, we can all go back to 21. We'd feel better, too. We'll keep you up to date. Grant McCauley at 540.
Yes, sir.
All on the way from Hooters Mall of Georgia.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foy & Associates Personal Injury Law.
And the big story continues to be Falcons Camp, guys, live from Hooters Mall. Hooters, baby, Hooters Mall of Georgia with Chris in for Carl today. We're going to hear some more from the Falcons, including what Drake London had to say to the media. And then Carl and I, before he took ill, we were talking earlier with DeMarco Helms, who's battling for that safety job. Really good. We also talked some Alabama with him and his thoughts on Coach Saban and his legacy. But first things first, Braves fans waiting to see if there's more help coming. Right now, there's really nothing going on, no big names. The only thing you could really talk about, other than, you know, the Yankees grabbing Leiter and Jazz Chisholm, the Phillies getting their closer, Estevez, there's been the Orioles and the Padres. Padres now traded 12 of their top 15 prospects this year for Dylan Cease, Luis Arraez, now Scott and Honig. So the Padres, I don't know if you know, in the years when I was a kid, they never spent money. And now three of the last five, they've really gone all in.
They continue to go for it, and they're in the catbird seat right now in terms of a playoff spot. They own the third wild card spot, and they're also in second place behind the Dodgers in the NL West. So they're having a bounce back season, but Mike, they're not good enough to win a World Series.
I don't see it.
The
Marlins have fired sailed everything. Tanner Scott and Brian Hanek I just mentioned. They also sent the other De La Cruz, no relation, to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So the Braves, is it as hard to pull something like that off in the division? They've traded with the Marlins before, but maybe nothing they were looking for. Braves, as you guys know, got Jorge Soler. We're going to talk to Grant McCauley about that coming up here in about 20 minutes. Right now, though, let's get back on the Falcons and what happened at the camp today. As we said earlier, great day for Bijan Robinson. He looked great. Defense, I thought one of those days, Chris, where both units had both impressive plays, including a big interception from Jesse Bates.
Yeah, the defense really showed out today for the first time, and they put the pads on, and you could really see the difference because the defense was struggling to put up against Kirk Cousins. He was really manipulating them with his eyes and his pre-snap movement, but that was before the pads came on. Right. Now that the pass rush was able to get home a little bit, you saw some guys making plays. You just mentioned Jesse Bates as well. And, Mike, I really thought I saw some really good stuff from the defensive line,
right.
which we know we've talked about over and over and over again, how right. important that is.
When they get in there, the rookie's looking good. We've talked about Rukoroho. Talked about some of the guys. Now, Grady, by the way, and it's funny. It's now that Grady's back and he's finally at 100%, he was, you know, chomping at the bit to get back on the field. Grady looked great today, too. He really did. Hey, man, let's hear from Drake London. Speaking of Kirk Cousins, what Chris just mentioned, Kirk is one intense dude, huh, Drake?
He's serious about ball. He brings that type of intensity, even though he may not look like it. He brings that for sure. And I think it's very contagious. So we go out there and we play ball, you know?
We play ball, baby. We asked Kyle Pitts and Bijan about Zach Robinson. Both said that he is taking, you know, a game plan. They didn't change the language to keep it simple. They didn't, like, you know, rewrite the playbook. And he's also getting a lot of collaboration. Here's Zach. Here's Drake, I should say, on Zach Robinson about, you know, how this is coming together.
We're always building. Zach is a mastermind with this stuff, so we can always keep on going up as we keep on progressing to the season. And I think we're doing a great job handling that as a core.
Mike, not to stir it up, but I'm going to stir it up a little. I'm hearing a lot of plaudits for the new coaching regime.
Right.
That I haven't necessarily heard as vocally strong in years prior.
Well, we did have guys here. We had a lot of turnover on the roster the first couple of years. We had no money. And then, you know, guys are just trying to hang on. Pitts was dealing with injuries last year. Drake, I think guys were never going to say, my quarterback sucks. You know, hey, Drake, how was practice today? Well, it'd be nice if they got the ball anywhere near me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's just things guys aren't going to say. They're professionals. But I think also, look, Arthur Smith had a chip on his shoulder. I guess if my dad started FedEx for all the wrong reasons, I would have been happy. I'd have been Tommy Boy in the corner office. But he tried to carve out his own niche. Like, I get it. It's easy to make fun of Arthur Smith. He just had a different energy. And there wasn't like there was any big mutiny there. The only complaints we ever heard was Cordero Patterson. It wasn't a complaint. He said, give me the ball, man. Get me in the game. It wasn't like Arthur Smith ever lost the room. But there is a different energy, and I think it's a more positive energy. How about that from this coaching staff?
Yeah, positive, and certainly it radiates throughout the locker room and throughout the field. You hear it on practice. I mean, Raheem's out there like a guy with his hair on fire, you know, right, running over to different – I heard him talking to the running backs coach. I heard him talking to the defensive line coach. He's sprinting in between the drills, talking to everybody. It's really something to watch.
Real quick, before we get to DeMarco Helms, Zach Robinson spoke in front of the media, our new offensive coordinator. Smoking Joe Patrick said, hey, what's up with Tyler Allgeier? He says he'll still have a big role in this offense, so that's good to hear. Also, and by the way, Allgeier had a couple of big hard runs today too.
Yes, he did. He and Bijan actually both were very, very effective.
Bijan looked great today, really did in practice. Also from Zach Robinson, he's impressed with Kyle Pitts. Remember, guys, we said we used to ask Arthur Smith, look, if Kyle Pitts can't pass block or run block, then don't ask him to.
Right.
Well, according to Zach, he says Kyle Pitts is improving his run blocking, and maybe that's because of the injury and he's finally 100% healthy.
I'd still leave it to Charlie Warner.
I would let Kyle Pitts be Jimmy, honestly, if we're honest, man. Be Jimmy Graham.
Yep.
Be, you know, there's Tony Gonzalez. Be that, you know, alpha dog.
Kelsey.
Exactly.
Yep,
yeah. Hey, man, DeMarco Helms from Alabama. We spoke to him earlier. Here's Carl and I on the field right after practice.
We're here with DeMarco Helms, who's competing, obviously, for one of those spots in the secondary, man. First day of pads, how'd it feel?
Oh, it felt good, you know, to just be out there, you know, with pads on, get the chance to bang a little bit. So it was definitely good for day one.
Seventh rounder out of Alabama. You made an impression last year, man. What are you building on from last year's experience?
You know, just to, you know, build on last year, you know, get better in things, you know, both on and off the field. You know, just to approach the game, you know, with a little bit more experience. Not letting anything, you know, be brand new to me like it kind of was last year. So, you know, just coming into the second year, second camp, you know, with more confidence.
I don't want to say overwhelming, that's the wrong word, but there is an adjustment, right, coming from college, no matter where you played, into the NFL. Talk about that.
You know, there was an adjustment, but I wouldn't say it was overwhelming, just because, you know, I feel like Alabama prepared me a lot, you know, for what to expect at the next level as far as, you know, defenses, competition, and overall, you know, just the mental aspect. You know, coming into my rookie year, it wasn't overwhelming, but it was definitely, you know, a new experience for me.
It is Falcon safety DeMarco Helms with us, guys, here live on Dukes and Bell. How has Jesse Bates helped you? Did he help you last year? How's some of the older guys helping you out?
Oh, yeah, Jesse is definitely he helped me a lot last year, and he's helped me this year as well, of course. He's just a great teammate, a great leader on the defense and on the whole team. A lot of guys can lean on him, you know, for, you know, advice, you know, how to get better at the player at the safety position. And I just take things after him as far as, you know, what he does. I try my best, you know, when I see him do something nice, you know, like he, you know, had some good plays today. I go ask, you know, what did you see on that? You know, what was your, you know, how did you process that? Just to, you know, get to the level that he is, it's great to, you know, have someone like him on our defense. So, you know, I feel like I'd be wrong, you know, to not learn from him.
So the difference in this defense with Jimmy Lake versus what you ran last year, is it completely different? Is it similar? What are the nuances to it? Because we talked to A.J. Terrell, and he was like, he feels like he's going to be able to, you know, make some more plays in this scheme.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely some things that he kept the same, just because, you know, we have a lot of guys that we had on the same team last year. But he's definitely brought in his own things, you know, that we like. He's definitely given us a chance, you know, make more plays on the ball and, you know, just allowing us to play fast. So, you know, we definitely like the things that Coach Lake is doing for us.
What's it like seeing Penix and Kirk Cousins out there zipping that? The ball looks like it's really flying out there.
Yeah, it's great to have them out there. You know, they're two great quarterbacks. They give us great looks. Hopefully we give them great looks as well. So it's good to, you know, get that competition going out there. So that way when we go to the game day, we'll be playing against quarterbacks that we'll have a better look for, just because we're getting some great looks from good quarterbacks on our own team.
DeMarco Helms joining us. We're on the verge of starting, obviously, college football. You played at Alabama under Nick Saban. Let's talk a little bit about that, because there's been some changes, but talk about your experience there, man, and you know, you going there, you guys won a lot, obviously, and now with the changing, you know, the change of coach, a lot of people still expect Alabama to be in the mix. Talk about your experience.
My experience at Alabama, I loved it. It was ups and downs, of course. Won a lot of games, you know, lost some big ones, unfortunately, but it was great for me. Going into high school, I know there's a lot of NIL and things like that, but Coach Saban didn't offer me anything but a scholarship. But it was great. I met some, you know, lifelong friends there. And definitely the new coach, Coach DeBoer, I definitely hear a lot of great things from him as far as, you know, the players that I still know on the team there. They have a lot of guys there that I play with, and I know that they're great players, good people. So I'm definitely confident, you know, in what they can do this year. I'm confident in the guys that they have in the locker room. So, you know, I'm still rooting for Alabama no matter who the coach.
And just follow up, were you surprised that he stepped away? It's hard to imagine Nick Saban not coaching at Alabama.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard to see him step away. I know some people probably imagine that he had kicked the bucket in the office. But, you know, it's, you know, with the NIL and things like that, you know, I know it's probably hard for him to, you know, for a lot of kids to, you know, look at Alabama and look at Coach Saban, you know, as a money grab instead of, you know, what a lot of older guys looked at it as, you know, as far as, all right, I'm not worried about, you know, NIL or money. I'm worried about, you know, what coach, you know, what program is going to give me the best, you know, chance to make it to the NFL. So, you know, that was my mindset why I chose Alabama. You know, that's the reason I stayed at Alabama when NIL came around. You know, I really looked at the bigger picture. So, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, it was time for him to, well, not time for him, but, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, it was inevitable for him to step away eventually once it started to be like, you know, a money game.
Right. DeMarco Helms made plenty of plays at Alabama, looking to make some plays for our Falcons. Real quick, talk about your one-on-one today with Kyle Pitts. And, you know, that development going up against Pitts or Drake or any of these guys out here.
Yeah. Kyle was definitely a great matchup for me today. You know, he got me a bit. But it's definitely, you know, first day of pads. You know, Kyle's a great tight end, great receiver as well. You know, he's a guy that can do it all. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure, you know, I gave myself, you know, a great look as far as, you know, not always going up against, you know, some of the bigger body tight ends. You know, I definitely has practiced. You know, it's day one. So, you know, I wanted to challenge myself. And, you know, I definitely appreciate Kyle for the good work.
And DeMarco, it's like a new house around here, all this stuff. You lose the fans, so you get some juice. Are you excited about Friday being out there at Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to be in Mercedes-Benz, you know, get that fan experience, get that crowd going a little bit. So, you know, we've definitely been missing them out here, you know, hyping up big plays. But I'm sure on Friday they'll be loud.
DeMarco! Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
Good stuff, man. DeMarco Helms, we're referring to all the new works that have gone down in the last 18 months at Flowery Branch, state-of-the-art weight room, the training, everything's just on a just grand scale. Hey, man, good news. Falcons are sold out for 2024. All season tickets are sold, man. So you're going to the secondary market, which could mean some good things for Falcon fans. Hopefully not selling those tickets to Steelers and Cowboys fans. But we know when you have no quarterback for 2 years and now you've got two quarterbacks capable of starting, that's created such a buzz for this Falcons team. Trying to create a buzz for the Atlanta Braves. Are we going to get some more guys? We're going to talk to Grant McCauley, guys, coming up next. We know we made the Solera move. Any pitching help in the next 20 minutes? This hour brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Braves at the trade deadline next.
Time for Around the Yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted.
The strong arm story of the day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
And the big story continues to be Falcons camp, guys, live from Hooters Mall. Hooters, baby, Hooters Mall of Georgia with Chris in for Carl today. We're going to hear some more from the Falcons, including what Drake London had to say to the media. And then Carl and I, before he took ill, we were talking earlier with DeMarco Helms, who's battling for that safety job. Really good. We also talked some Alabama with him and his thoughts on Coach Saban and his legacy. But first things first, Braves fans waiting to see if there's more help coming. Right now, there's really nothing going on, no big names. The only thing you could really talk about, other than, you know, the Yankees grabbing Leiter and Jazz Chisholm, the Phillies getting their closer, Estevez, there's been the Orioles and the Padres. Padres now traded 12 of their top 15 prospects this year for Dylan Cease, Luis Arraez, now Scott and Honig. So the Padres, I don't know if in the years when I was a kid, they never spent money. And now three of the last five, they've really gone all in.
They continue to go for it, and they're in the catbird seat right now in terms of a playoff spot. They own the third wild card spot, and they're also in second place behind the Dodgers in the NL West. So they're having a bounce back season, but Mike, they're not good enough to win a World Series.
I don't see it. The Marlins have fired sailed everything. Tanner Scott and Brian Hannig, I just mentioned. They also sent the other De La Cruz, no relation, to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So the Braves, is it as hard to pull something like that off in the division? They've traded with the Marlins before, but maybe nothing they were looking for. Braves, as you guys know, got Jorge Soler. We're going to talk to Grant McCauley about that coming up here in about 20 minutes. Right now, though, let's get back on the Falcons and what happened at the camp today. As we said earlier, great day for Bijan Robinson. He looked great. Defense, I thought one of those days, Chris, where both units had both impressive plays, including a big interception from Jesse Bates.
Yeah, the defense really showed out today for the first time, and they put the pads on, and you could really see the difference because the defense was struggling to put up against Kirk Cousins. He was really manipulating them with his eyes and his pre-snap movement, but that was before the pads came on. Right. Now that the pass rush was able to get home a little bit, you saw some guys making plays. You just mentioned Jesse Bates as well. And, Mike, I really thought I saw some really good stuff from the defensive line,
right,
which we know we've talked about over and over and over again, how right important that is.
When they get in there, the rookie he's looking good. We've talked about Ruka Roro. Talked about some of the guys. Now, Grady, by the way, and it's funny. It's now that Grady's back and he's finally at 100%, he was, chomping at the bit to get back on the field. Grady looked great today, too. He really did. Hey, man, let's hear from Drake London. Speaking of Kirk Cousins, what Chris just mentioned, Kirk is one intense dude, huh, Drake?
He's serious about ball. He brings that type of intensity, even though he may not look like it. He brings that for sure. And I think it's very contagious. So we go out there and we play ball,
We play ball, baby. We asked Kyle Pitts and Bijan about Zach Robinson. Both said that he is taking, a game plan. They didn't change the language to keep it simple. They didn't, rewrite the playbook. And he's also getting a lot of collaboration. Here's Drake, I should say, on Zach Robinson about how this is coming together.
We're always building. Zach is a mastermind with this stuff, so we can always keep on going up as we keep on progressing to the season. And I think we're doing a great job handling that as a core.
Mike, not to stir it up, but I'm going to stir it up a little. I'm hearing a lot of plaudits for the new coaching regime.
Right.
That I haven't necessarily heard as vocally strong in years prior.
Well, we did have guys here. We had a lot of turnover on the roster the first couple of years. We had no money. And then, guys are just trying to hang on. Pitts was dealing with injuries last year. Drake, I think guys were never going to say, my quarterback sucks. Hey, Drake, how was practice today? Well, it'd be nice if they got the ball anywhere near me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's just things guys aren't going to say. They're professionals. But I think also, look, Arthur Smith had a chip on his shoulder. I guess if my dad started FedEx for all the wrong reasons, I would have been happy. I'd have been Tommy Boy in the corner office. But he tried to carve out his own niche. Like, I get it. It's easy to make fun of Arthur Smith. He just had a different energy. And there wasn't like there was any big mutiny there. The only complaints we ever heard was Cordero Patterson. It wasn't a complaint. He said, give me the ball, man. Get me in the game. It wasn't like Arthur Smith ever lost the room, but there is a different energy, and I think it's a more positive energy. How about that from this coaching staff?
Yeah, positive, and certainly it radiates throughout the locker room and throughout the field. You hear it on practice. I mean, Raheem's out there like a guy with his hair on fire, right, running over to different – I heard him talking to the running backs coach. I heard him talking to the defensive line coach. He's sprinting in between the drills, talking to everybody. It's really something to watch.
Real quick, before we get to DeMarco Helms, Zach Robinson spoke in front of the media, our new offensive coordinator. Smoking Joe Patrick said, hey, what's up with Tyler Allgeier? He says he'll still have a big role in this offense, so that's good to hear. Also, and by the way, Allgeier had a couple of big hard runs today, too.
Yes, he did. He and Bijan actually both were very, very effective.
Bijan looked great today. Really did in practice. Also from Zach Robinson, he's impressed with Kyle Pitts. Remember, guys, we said we used to ask Arthur Smith, look, if Kyle Pitts can't pass block or run block, then don't ask him to.
Right.
Well, according to Zach, he says Kyle Pitts is improving his run blocking, and maybe that's because of the injury and he's finally 100% healthy.
I'd still leave it to Charlie Warner.
I would let Kyle Pitts be Jimmy, honestly, if we're honest, man. Be Jimmy Graham.
Yep.
Be, you know, there's Tony Gonzalez. Be that, you know, alpha dog.
Kelsey.
Exactly.
Yep,
yeah. Hey, man, DeMarco Helms from Alabama. We spoke to him earlier. Here's Carl and I on the field right after practice.
We're here with DeMarco Helms, who's competing, obviously, for one of those spots in the secondary, man. First day of pads, how'd it feel?
Oh, I felt good, you know, to just be out there, you know, with pads on, get the chance to bang a little bit. So it was definitely good for day one.
Seventh rounder out of Alabama. You made an impression last year, man. What are you building on from last year's experience?
You know, just to, you know, build on last year, you know, get better in things, you know, both on and off the field. You know, just to approach the game, you know, with a little bit more experience. Not letting anything, you know, be brand new to me like it kind of was last year. So, you know, just coming into the second year, second camp, you know, with more confidence.
I don't want to say overwhelming, that's the wrong word, but there is an adjustment, right, coming from college, no matter where you played, into the NFL. Talk about that.
You know, there was an adjustment, but I wouldn't say it was overwhelming, just because, you know, I feel like Alabama prepared me a lot, you know, for what to expect at the next level as far as, you know, defenses, competition, and overall, you know, just the mental aspect. You know, coming into my rookie year, it wasn't overwhelming, but it was definitely, you know, a new experience for me.
It is Falcon safety DeMarco Helms with us, guys, here live on Dukes and Bell. How has Jesse Bates helped you? Did he help you last year? How's some of the older guys helping you out?
Oh, yeah, Jesse is definitely, he helped me a lot last year, and he's helped me this year as well, of course. He's just a great teammate, a great leader on the defense and on the whole team. A lot of guys can lean on him, you know, for, you know, advice, you know, how to get better at the safety position. And I just take things after him as far as, you know, what he does. I try my best, you know, when I see him do something nice, you know, like he, you know, had some good plays today. I go ask, you know, what did you see on that? You know, what was your, you know, how did you process that? Just to, you know, get to the level that he is, it's great to, you know, have someone like him on our defense. So, you know, I feel like I'd be wrong, you know, to not learn from him.
So the difference in this defense with Jimmy Lake versus what you ran last year, is it completely different? Is it similar? What are the nuances to it? Because we talked to A.J. Terrell, and he was like, he feels like he's going to be able to, you know, make some more plays in this scheme.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely some things that he kept the same, just because, you know, we have a lot of guys that we had on the same team last year. But he's definitely brought in his own things, you know, that we like. He's definitely given us a chance, you know, make more plays on the ball and, you know, just allowing us to play fast. So, you know, we definitely like the things that Coach Lake is doing for us.
What's it like seeing Penix and Kirk Cousins out there zipping that? The ball looks like it's really flying out there.
Yeah, it's great to have them out there. You know, they're two great quarterbacks. They give us great looks. Hopefully we give them great looks as well. So it's good to, you know, get that competition going out there. So that way when we go to the game day, we'll be playing against quarterbacks that we'll have a better look for, just because we're getting some great looks from good quarterbacks on our own team.
DeMarco Helms joining us. We're on the verge of starting, obviously, college football. You played at Alabama under Nick Saban. Let's talk a little bit about that, because there's been some changes, but talk about your experience there, man, and you know, you going there, you guys won a lot, obviously, and now with the changing, you know, the change of coach, a lot of people still expect Alabama to be in the mix. Talk about your experience.
My experience at Alabama, I loved it. It was ups and downs, of course. Won a lot of games, you know, lost some big ones, unfortunately, but it was great for me. Going into high school, I know there's a lot of NIL and things like that, but Coach Saban didn't offer me anything but a scholarship. But it was great. I met some, you know, lifelong friends there. And definitely the new coach, Coach DeBoer, I definitely hear a lot of great things from him as far as, you know, the players that I still know on the team there. They have a lot of guys there that I play with, and I know that they're great players, good people. So I'm definitely confident, you know, in what they can do this year. I'm confident in the guys that they have in the locker room. So, you know, I'm still rooting for Alabama no matter who the coach.
And just follow up, were you surprised that he stepped away? It's hard to imagine Nick Saban not coaching at Alabama.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard to see him step away. I know some people probably imagine that he had kicked the bucket in the office. But, you know, it's, you know, with the NIL and things like that, you know, I know it's probably hard for him to, you know, for a lot of kids to, you know, look at Alabama and look at Coach Saban, you know, as a money grab instead of, you know, what a lot of older guys looked at it as, you know, as far as all right, I'm not worried about, you know, NIL or money. I'm worried about, you know, what coach, you know, what program is going to give me the best, you know, chance to make it to the NFL. So, you know, that was my mindset why I chose Alabama. You know, that's the reason I stayed at Alabama when NIL came around. You know, I really looked at the bigger picture. So, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, it was time for him to, well, not time for him, but you know, I kind of felt like, you know, it was inevitable for him to step away eventually once it started to be like, you know, a money game.
Right.
DeMarco Helms made plenty of plays at Alabama, looking to make some plays for our Falcons. Real quick, talk about your one-on-one today with Kyle Pitts and, you know, that development going up against Pitts or Drake or any of these guys out here.
Yeah. Kyle was definitely a great matchup for me today. You know, he got me a bit. But it's definitely, you know, first day of pads. You know, Kyle's a great tight end, great receiver as well. You know, he's a guy that can do it all. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure, you know, I gave myself, you know, a great look as far as, you know, not always going up against, you know, some of the bigger body tight ends. You know, I definitely has practiced. You know, it's day one. So, you know, I wanted to challenge myself. And, you know, I definitely appreciate Kyle for the good work.
And DeMarco, it's like a new house around here, all this stuff. We lose the fans, so you get some juice. Are you excited about Friday being out there at Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to be in Mercedes-Benz, you know, get that fan experience, get that crowd going a little bit. So, you know, we've definitely been missing them out here, you know, hyping up big plays. But I'm sure on Friday they'll be loud.
DeMarco! Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
Good stuff, man. DeMarco Helms, we're referring to all the new works that have gone down the last 18 months at Flowery Branch, state-of-the-art weight room, the training, everything's just on a just grand scale. Hey, man, good news. Falcons are sold out for 2024. All season tickets are sold, man. So you're going to the secondary market, which could mean some good things for Falcon fans. Hopefully not selling those tickets to Steelers and Cowboys fans. But we know when you have no quarterback for 2 years and now you've got two quarterbacks capable of starting, that's created such a buzz for this Falcons team. Trying to create a buzz for the Atlanta Braves. Are we going to get some more guys? We're going to talk to Grant McCauley, guys, coming up next. We know we made the Solera move. Any pitching help in the next 20 minutes? This hour brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Braves at the trade deadline next.
Time for Around the Yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone!
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yeah, man, 92.9 The Game. It's Dukes and Bell with Chris and for Carl today. We're up at Falcons camp. More on what we saw, more interviews coming up in the six. But today is MLB trade deadline day. 6 o'clock. What are we going to do? And by the way, we may hear from Grant a second time if something does happen between now and 6 o'clock. Grant McCauley joins us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Grant, we go with a blast from the past, and it was a hell of a blast to win the World Series in Game 6 back in 2021. But what do you think, tell the audience, is left with Jorge Soler for this Braves team?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is the kind of upgrade that you wanted offensively just based on the fact that, you know, Jorge Soler has been swinging the bat well. He's getting on base, and you know this guy. And what this means, like, long-term over the next couple of years, because he is under a multi-year contract, I think they're just going to have to sort that out in the future. But going out and getting someone that could help you right now was a must, and I feel like the Braves did that. They also were able to get an arm that they know very well. I mean, this was one of the most bizarre trades I've ever seen. I think I said this morning, because I went to bed early last night, which was clearly a mistake the night before the deadline to go to bed early, and found out that three 2021 postseason heroes and or Braves were all being traded for one another. So this has been a very strange deal, unlike any that I think I can think of and unlike any that I could have thought up on my own.
Grant, when it comes to the starting pitching staff, if the Braves don't make a move in the next 15 minutes or so, do you feel that it's because Reynaldo Lopez avoided the IL and it's because Max Fried should be back soon?
Yeah, it's both of those things. And I feel like, obviously, the big picture, I mean, the biggest piece of that is the health of those two guys that would keep you from needing to go out and get involved in what, if you start to look around at the starting pitchers that were getting traded, a lot of fringe guys, a lot of fours and fives, and also pitchers that have either been kind of in that DFA limbo, perhaps, or would be very soon, or coming off the injured list. This has not been a who's who of, like, top-of-the-rotation arms, at least not yet. And we could find out in the next 15 or so minutes. We could also find out with deals that trickle through after the deadline, the same way the first Jorge Soler deal did 3 years ago. But I haven't really seen any starting pitcher that moved that, you know, was a price tag that I thought the Braves should be out there looking to pay that. If you're getting Max Fried back and if Reynaldo Lopez avoids the IL, then you consider that you do have A.J. Smith-Shawver, you do have Ian Anderson, you do have Bryce Elder. I mean, there is some depth there. rather than go out and overpay for somebody who might be exactly like one of the other three guys I just mentioned.
I know we were waiting to see if the White Sox, there's a couple of players, the Dodgers with Flaherty, waiting to see if Crochet is going to get traded. Maybe that happens here in the next 15 minutes or so. But one thing for certain, Grant, when Chris was going through the names, as Grant McCauley joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline, the list of names, it's a lot of guys, unless you're hardcore baseball, they're setup guys, they're role players. You know, we saw Philly's got a closer. Yankees got a starter. Yankees got Jazz Chisholm. We saw him pay some dividends. I get it. I'm not expecting the Braves to mortgage what's left of the future because there's not as many assets down there in the minors. But do you feel, I mean, the guys are asking me, like, what should we expect from Luke Jackson? I mean, is Luke Jackson even going to be on this roster?
Yeah, no, he definitely will be. And that's just one of those, I think, just trying to find another piece that might be able to help you out, because there have been, you know, a couple of cracks here and there in the pitching staff. Obviously, I'm talking to you the day after Grant Holmes went out and gave a fantastic spot start. And then the Braves bullpen, kind of the lesser arms, let that game completely get away. Now, the offense also didn't do what it needed to do to win against Milwaukee last night. But just kind of looking at ways that you could add just a little bit more depth. I don't know that the return of Tyler Matzek was anytime imminent. I haven't heard any updates on when that would have been happening. So this was moving a piece and then getting somebody who's had a very good July, Luke Jackson has. So that,
right,
obviously, getting somebody who's pitching well and then somebody who's hitting well, like Jorge Soler, I think that was kind of the design of these moves, just to at least signal to your team that we're out here trying to find you some help in a couple of different spots. So the Soler deal, obviously, he's the big part of it. But I think Luke Jackson could play a role here as well, even if he's not going to be in charge of the same kind of high-leverage spots that he was last time around.
And you mentioned Soler. So Soler bats leadoff. So conceivably, we can have Soler, Rosario, and Duvall as your starting outfield until we get Ronnie Harris back.
You definitely could, and it's a strange, strange world we're living in, because none of those guys were obviously on the Braves. I don't even know if they were on the Braves' radar when they reported for spring training. You had Eddie Rosario eventually signing with Washington. Adam Duvall found his way back to Atlanta at the very end of camp. And then obviously the Soler deal. Don't think we're going to see Jock Peterson coming over. The Arizona Diamondbacks seem to be pretty firmly in the buyer's camp. So not going to get everybody back in there. But, yeah, it's a strange thing that what's old is apparently new again.
Grant, when it comes to looking at the future and the rest of this season, as the Braves continue to make their way through and scrap and fight and claw, but they still remain the number one wild card spot, I just wonder if, even if they do make another move, exactly where they stand in the pecking order right now, because I need to see more from Riley, who's turning it around, Olsen, who's turning it around. Arcia looks like he might be turning it around. But at what point do you feel like the sample size would allow us to be more comfortable with the results that we've seen of late?
I mean, they just have to keep doing it. I think that's really the simplest answer I can give you. I mean, clearly you wanted to see some signs. And again, and I said this yesterday, not to, you know, jump all over this point, and I certainly am not trying to jump on Mike with it, but Austin Riley has been swinging the bat so well over the past month and a half that I know he had an awful first couple of months, but I kind of have separated him from guys who need to figure it out at this point. I do think that it's squarely Matt Olson. And you know, the other thing is you can kind of tell that Matt Olson knows it as well. He wants to get things turned around because they need him in the middle of the order to be the guy, not that hits 54 homers every year, but that is a slugger, a run producer, the way that he has been throughout his career. You throw Jorge Soler at the top of the lineup, a guy who has been getting on base, maybe you're finally able to set the table for Austin Riley. I mean, we've seen a lot of solo home runs, and that's, you know, it's great that the Braves are hitting home runs, but not as many with runners on base, and that's something that they've got to solve. So, yeah, you can look at Olson as a guy that needs to turn it around. You need more out of your other outfielders. You need a lot out of Michael Harris when he comes back. I think Travis d'Arnaud and Sean Murphy have been swinging pretty well. D'Arnaud's been getting a lot of playing time, though, lately, which to me is at least a little bit curious, but I don't know. Maybe you just ride the hot hand and split that playing time down the middle for the time being. But Orlando Arcia also could help you out by swinging better, but I just don't feel like the onus is on him. Really, it comes back to pretty squarely on Matt Olson. If you're going to get this lineup clicking the way that it needs to, you need the guy who's supposed to be batting cleanup to become a run-producing machine again, and he's capable of doing it, and maybe what we've been seeing lately are signs that he is starting to figure it out.
It's just so hard to get a handle on this. You talked about Austin Riley kind of out of the weeds. The OPS was 613, you know, back in May, and then the average jumped to 289 back in June. And then we get to July, he's batting 253. So, I mean, still the 14 home runs and 42 RBIs. To your point, guys have to be on base to knock him in. And the leadoff role has just been completely obliterated since Acuna's injury. So, I guess all we can do is – and I guess the answer, Grant, that's – I know we come to this conclusion. Guys, do your job and hit. You know, Garcia, maybe that's a spark. He crushed one last night. Ozuna continues to do what he's been doing all season long. By the way, that's one of the hardest, farthest hit balls I've seen in that ballpark last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that he hits them in places where a lot of other guys would just have to buy a ticket to deliver a baseball out there. But, you know, we've got the bright spots of it, of this lineup, have been few and far between. But Marcell Ozuna has been kind of a beacon of light, the North Star, whatever you want to call him in terms of, you know, being the best that the Braves have had to offer this year. It is just still, even at this point, you know, putting aside, and I talked a lot about this on From the Diamond this Sunday, or this past Sunday, you have to put aside 2023 because that is last year, and the numbers do tell you where you are this year, but it is still surprising to see the Braves regress the way that they have, and it's still difficult, despite all of these numbers and the sample size that you're asking about, Chris, to think that, well, they can't play any better than they have. Surely they can. We've just got to see them go out there and do it because, as the old saying goes, seeing is believing.
The other thing is last night, and maybe we've been so focused on the Phillies, take Milwaukee for granted. I mean, that was a 2-1 game. Grant Holmes did a fantastic job last night.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Chavez didn't have his A game. And then Milwaukee just drops the hammer on you, and they do that to a lot of people.
Yeah, they do. They're a club that has fought this year to take over the National League Central. They haven't really gotten pushed by anybody. They did just lose Christian Yelich for who knows what period of time, so that's obviously not going to help them out. But even though they've traded away Corbin Burns, they continue to show that they've got enough pitching to be a contender. And even in a post-Craig Council era, this is a club that can hang around. They may not get all of the money dumped on them like some of the other contenders do, but they're a club that it seemingly they're always there. They find a way to be in there, and they find a way to be a kind of a pesky club, if nothing else. And so, yeah, the Braves need to handle their business, get on home, because we're going to be seeing a very different Miami Marlins team this weekend because they just continue to make trade after trade after trade. And that's a series that I don't know if I need to say this, but I'll say it anyway. The Braves need to take at all costs.
Yes.
Grant, when it comes to the biggest name in this market, we just got some breaking news from Ken Rosenthal. Garrett Crochet of the White Sox will not be traded. Now, I want to ask you how that relates to the Braves here, because we talked about it at the beginning of the interview. The Braves right now really don't even have the type of prospects you would think to bring back that type of arm and then even pay him what he would want to be paid. What is the state of the Braves farm system right now? Maybe even looking towards next year's trading deadline as the Braves would look to maybe revamp again. I just wonder what the state of it is, because the days of the Dansbys and the Freddies being in the pipeline are gone.
Yeah, but I mean that's been a long time ago, and even since those guys, you've had guys come along that have been very useful, if not great major leaguers, the most recent of which obviously a couple of years ago, you had Michael Harris and Spencer Strider come out of a farm system that was ranked in the high 20s in Major League Baseball. You just never know what might be down there. And all these clubs, they assess their talent differently than all the publications and websites that all of us are kind of pouring over and reading and trying to make our best judgment on. So I think that they have done a really nice job the last couple of years in particular of restocking in arms. They're also able to sign international prospects again, which was not the case for the duration of that ban that they were handed in late 2017. Those things in concert can help the Braves get back to having a higher-ranked farm system. Right now, most publications, I think, they're somewhere in the middle of the pack. That's a market improvement over being 27th, 28th, the way that they have been in some recent years. So I think they might be, even at this point, a little bit underrated, even though they may not be the most surprising and exciting names across all of baseball when it comes to prospects. It's
right.
Still a better farm system, and we've seen Alex Anthopoulos do more with less in the past.
Before we cut you loose, Grant, the Phillies, they got the hitting. They've just been tearing the cover off the ball. They pick up Tanner Banks, left-hander from the White Sox, so a guy they can use in a relief role, maybe as a starter on a six, if they go to a six-man down the stretch. So Phillies kind of doing the money moves. We lose Matzik. Real quick, just his legacy. I know that, 2021, we talked a lot about Soler, what he...
It's time for Around the Yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone!
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yeah, man, 99 The Game. It's Dukes and Bell with Chris and for Carl today. We're up at Falcons camp. More on what we saw, more interviews coming up in the six. But today is MLB trade deadline day, 6 o'clock. What are we going to do? And by the way, we may hear from Grant a second time if something does happen between now and 6 o'clock. Grant McCauley joins us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Grant, we go with a blast from the past, and it was a hell of a blast to win the World Series in Game 6 back in 2021. But what do you think, tell the audience, is left with Jorge Soler for this Braves team?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is the kind of upgrade that you wanted offensively just based on the fact that, you know, Jorge Soler has been swinging the bat well. He's getting on base, and you know this guy. And what this means, like, long-term over the next couple of years, because he is under a multi-year contract, I think they're just going to have to sort that out in the future. But going out and getting someone that could help you right now was a must, and I feel like the Braves did that. They also were able to get an arm that they know very well. I mean, this was one of the most bizarre trades I've ever seen. I think I said this morning, because I went to bed early last night, which was clearly a mistake the night before the deadline to go to bed early, and found out that three 2021 postseason heroes and or Braves were all being traded for one another. So this has been a very strange deal, unlike any that I think I can think of and unlike any that I could have thought up on my own.
Grant, when it comes to the starting pitching staff, if the Braves don't make a move in the next 15 minutes or so, do you feel that it's because Reynaldo Lopez avoided the IL and it's because Max Fried should be back soon?
Yeah, it's both of those things. And I feel like, obviously, the big picture, I mean, the biggest piece of that is the health of those two guys that would keep you from needing to go out and get involved in what, if you start to look around at the starting pitchers that were getting traded, a lot of fringe guys, a lot of fours and fives, and also pitchers that have either been kind of in that DFA limbo, perhaps, or would be very soon, or coming off the injured list. This has not been a who's who of, like, top-of-the-rotation arms, at least not yet. And we could find out in the next 15 or so minutes. We could also find out with deals that trickle through after the deadline, the same way the first Jorge Soler deal did 3 years ago. But I haven't really seen any starting pitcher that moved that, you know, was a price tag that I thought the Braves should be out there looking to pay that. If you're getting Max Fried back and if Reynaldo Lopez avoids the IL, then you consider that you do have A.J. Smith-Shawver, you do have Ian Anderson, you do have Bryce Elder. I mean, there is some depth there rather than go out and overpay for somebody who might be exactly like one of the other three guys I just mentioned.
I know we were waiting to see if the White Sox, there's a couple of players, the Dodgers with Flaherty, waiting to see if Crochet is going to get traded. Maybe that happens here in the next 15 minutes or so. But one thing for certain, Grant, when Chris was going through the names, as Grant McCauley joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline, the list of names, it's a lot of guys, unless you're hardcore baseball, they're setup guys, they're role players. You know, we saw the, you know, Philly's got a closer, Yankees got a starter, Yankees got Jazz Chisholm. We saw him pay some dividends. I get it. I'm not expecting the Braves to mortgage what's left of the future because there's not as many assets down there in the minors. But do you feel, I mean, the guys were asking me, like, what should we expect from Luke Jackson? I mean, is Luke Jackson even going to be on this roster?
Yeah, no, he definitely will be, and that's just one of those, I think, just trying to find another piece that might be able to help you out, because there have been, you know, a couple of cracks here and there in the pitching staff. Obviously, I'm talking to you the day after Grant Holmes went out and gave a fantastic spot start, and then the Braves bullpen, kind of the lesser arms, let that game completely get away. Now, the offense also didn't do what it needed to do to win against Milwaukee last night, but just kind of looking at ways that you could add just a little bit more depth. I don't know that the return of Tyler Matzek was anytime imminent. I haven't heard any updates on when that would have been happening. So this was moving a piece and then getting somebody who's had a very good July, Luke Jackson has. So that, right, obviously, getting somebody who's pitching well and then somebody who's hitting well, like Jorge Soler, I think that was kind of the design of these moves, just to at least signal to your team that we're out here trying to find you some help in a couple of different spots. So the Soler deal, obviously, he's the big part of it. But I think Luke Jackson could play a role here as well, even if he's not going to be in charge of the same kind of high-leverage spots that he was last time around.
And you mentioned Soler. So Soler bats leadoff. So conceivably, we can have Soler, so, Rosario, and Duvall as your starting outfield until we get Ronnie Harris back.
You definitely could. And it's a strange, strange world we're living in because none of those guys were obviously on the Braves. I don't even know if they were on the Braves' radar when they reported for spring training. You had Eddie Rosario eventually signing with Washington. Adam Duvall found his way back to Atlanta at the very end of camp. And then obviously the Soler deal. Don't think we're going to see Jock Peterson coming over. The Arizona Diamondbacks seem to be pretty firmly in the buyer's camp. So not going to get everybody back in there. But, yeah, it's a strange thing that what's old is apparently new again.
Grant, when it comes to looking at the future and the rest of this season, as the Braves continue to make their way through and scrap and fight and claw, but they still remain the number one wild card spot, I just wonder if, even if they do make another move, exactly where they stand in the pecking order right now, because I need to see more from Riley, who's turning it around, Olsen, who's turning it around. Arcia looks like he might be turning it around. But at what point do you feel like the sample size would allow us to be more comfortable with the results that we've seen of late?
I mean, they just have to keep doing it. I think that's really the simplest answer I can give you. I mean, clearly you wanted to see some signs. And again, and I said this yesterday, not to, you know, jump all over this point, and I certainly am not trying to jump on Mike with it, but Austin right. Riley has been swinging the bat so well over the past month and a half that I know he had an awful first couple of months, but I kind of have separated him from guys who need to figure it out at this point. I do right. think that it's squarely Matt Olson. And, you know, the other thing is you can kind of tell that Matt Olson knows it as well. He wants to get things turned around because they need him in the middle of the order to be the guy, not that hits 54 homers every year, but that is a slugger, a run producer, the way that he has been throughout his career. You throw Jorge Soler at the top of the lineup, a guy who has been getting on base, maybe you're finally able to set the table for Austin Riley. I mean, we've seen a lot of solo home runs, and that's, you know, it's right. great that the Braves are hitting home runs, but not as many with runners on base, and that's something that they've got to solve. So, yeah, you can look at Olson as a guy that needs to turn it around. You need more out of your other outfielders. You need a lot out of, I think, out of Michael Harris when he comes back. I think Travis d'Arnaud and Sean Murphy have been swinging pretty well. D'Arnaud's been getting a lot of playing time, though, lately, which to me is at least a little bit curious, but I don't know. Maybe you just ride the hot hand and split that playing time down the middle for the time being. But Orlando Arcia also could help you out by swinging better, but I just don't feel like the onus is on him. Really, it comes back to pretty squarely on Matt Olson. If you're going to get this lineup clicking the way that it needs to, you need the guy who's supposed to be batting cleanup to become a run-producing machine again, and he's capable of doing it, and maybe what we've been seeing lately are signs that he is starting to figure it out.
It's just so hard to get, you know, get a handle on this. You talked about Austin Riley kind of out of the weeds. The OPS yep. was 613, you know, back in May, and then the average jumped to 289 back in June, and then we get to July, he's batting 253. So, I mean, still the 14 home runs and 42 RBIs. To your point, guys have to be on base to knock him in, and the leadoff yep. role has just been completely obliterated since Acuna's injury. So, I guess all we can do is, and I guess the answer, Grant, that's, I know we come to this conclusion. Guys, do your job and hit. You know, yes. Arcia, maybe that's a spark. He crushed one last night. Ozuna continues to do what he's been doing all season long. By the way, that's one of the hardest, farthest hit balls I've seen in that ballpark last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that he hits them in places where a lot of other guys would just have to buy a ticket to deliver a baseball out there. But, you know, we've got, you know, the bright spots of it, of this lineup have been few and far between. But Marcell Ozuna has been kind of a beacon of light, the North Star, whatever you want to call him in terms of, you know, being the best that the Braves have had to offer this year. It is just still, even at this point, you know, putting aside, and I talked a lot about this on From the Diamond this Sunday, or this past Sunday, you have to put aside 2023 because that is last year, and the numbers do tell you where you are this year, but it is still surprising to see the Braves regress the way that they have, and it's still difficult, despite all of these numbers and the sample size that you're asking about, Chris, to think that, well, they can't play any better than they have. Surely they can. We've just got to see them go out there and do it because, as the old saying goes, seeing is believing.
The other thing is last night, and maybe we've been so focused on the Phillies, take Milwaukee for granted. I mean, that was a 2-1 game. Grant Holmes did a fantastic job last night.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Chavez didn't have his A game. And then Milwaukee just drops the hammer on you, and they do that to a lot of people.
Yeah, they do. They're a club that has fought this year to take over the National League Central. They haven't really gotten pushed by anybody. They did just lose Christian Yelich for who knows what period of time, so that's obviously not going to help them out. But even though they've traded away Corbin Burns, they continue to show that they've got enough pitching to be a contender. And even in a post-Craig Council era, this is a club that can hang around. They may not get all of the money dumped on them like some of the other contenders do, but they're a club that it seemingly they're always there. They find a way to be in there, and they find a way to be, you know, a kind of a pesky club, if nothing else. And so, yeah, the Braves need to handle their business, get on home, because we're going to be seeing a very different Miami Marlins team this weekend because they just continue to make trade after trade after trade. And that's a series that I don't know if I need to say this, but I'll say it anyway. The Braves need to take at all costs.
Yes.
Grant, when it comes to the biggest name in this market, we just got some breaking news from Ken Rosenthal. Garrett Crochet of the White Sox will not be traded. Now, I want to ask you how that relates to the Braves here, because we talked about it at the beginning of the interview. The Braves right now really don't even have the type of prospects you would think to bring back that type of arm and then even pay him what he would want to be paid. What is the state of the Braves farm system right now, maybe even looking towards next year's trading deadline as the Braves would look to maybe revamp again? I just wonder what the state of it is, because the days of the Dansbys and the Freddies being in the pipeline are gone.
Yeah, but I mean that's been a long time ago, and even since those guys, you've had guys come along that have been very useful, if not great major leaguers, the most recent of which obviously a couple of years ago, you had Michael Harris and Spencer Strider come out of a farm system that was ranked in the high 20s in Major League Baseball. You just never know what might be down there. And all these clubs, they assess their talent differently than all the publications and websites that all of us are kind of pouring over and reading and trying to make our best judgment on. So I think that they have done a really nice job the last couple of years in particular of restocking in arms. They're also able to sign international prospects again, which was not the case for the duration of that ban that they were handed in late 2017. Those things in concert can help the Braves get back to having a higher-ranked farm system. Right now, most publications, I think, they're somewhere in the middle of the pack. That's a market improvement over being 27th, 28th, the way that they have been in some recent years. So I think they might be, even at this point, a little bit underrated, even though they may not be the most surprising and exciting names across all of baseball when it comes to prospects. It's right. Still a better farm system, and we've seen Alex Anthopoulos do more with less in the past.
Before we cut you loose, Grant, the Phillies, they got the hitting. They've just been tearing the cover off the ball. They pick up Tanner Banks, left-hander from the White Sox, so a guy they can use in a relief role, maybe as a starter on a six, if they go to a six-man down the stretch. So Phillies kind of doing the money moves. We lose Matzik. Real quick, just his legacy. I know that, 2021, we talked a lot about Soler, what he means. Matzik was part of one of the greatest bullpens of all time, wasn't he?
Yeah, not only that, but I said this on social, and I'll stand by it. As far as moments that I have witnessed in the history of the Braves franchise, Tyler Matzik authored one of the top ones you could ever ask for. You can go to thousands and thousands of games and not see a moment like that. And he stood up there and got into a serious jam and got out of it for Luke Jackson, nonetheless,
right,
to close out that Dodgers series and close out that Dodgers the Dodgers' best opportunity to get back in that NLCS, an unforgettable moment for him. And speaking of the Dodgers, they just got Jack Flaherty from the Tigers, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN.
That's a huge move.
That's a big one.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, we figured that was coming. So the Dodgers keep on doing what they're doing. We'll have to wait and see if there's any more action for the Braves. But Grant kind of said our team is on the field. Grant, if it does break, something pops, we'll get back to you, man. The six, thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Grant McCauley there. And, yeah, man, unbelievable, man. You take it back to the 21 NLCS. Mookie Betts, Albert Pujols, remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, Goosebumps City, that amazing run, which culminates with Ray Soler in the home run into the night in Houston. Now he's back. See if we can go home again. We'll come back, look at the top three, tell you what's going around the NFL. Coming to the six, what NFL wide receiver says we're the worst fans?
Ugh.
Live at Hooters Mall of Georgia. Hooters, baby. Come on, join the party.
It's time for Around the Yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone!
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yeah, man, 92.9, The Game. It's Dukes and Bell with Chris and for Carl today. We're up at Falcons camp. More on what we saw, more interviews coming up in the six. But today is MLB trade deadline day, 6 o'clock. What are we going to do? And by the way, we may hear from Grant a second time if something does happen between now and 6 o'clock. Grant McCauley joins us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Grant, we go with a blast from the past, and it was a hell of a blast to win the World Series in Game 6 back in 2021. But what do you think, tell the audience, is left with Jorge Soler for this Braves team?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is the kind of upgrade that you wanted offensively just based on the fact that, Jorge Soler has been swinging the bat well. He's getting on base, and you know this guy. And what this means, like, long-term over the next couple of years, because he is under a multi-year contract, I think they're just going to have to sort that out in the future. But going out and getting someone that could help you right now is a must, and I feel like the Braves did that. They also were able to get an arm that they know very well. I mean, this was one of the most bizarre trades I've ever seen. I think I said this morning, because I went to bed early last night, which was clearly a mistake the night before the deadline to go to bed early, and found out that three 2021 postseason heroes and or Braves were all being traded for one another. So this has been a very strange deal, unlike any that I think I could think of and unlike any that I could have thought up on my own.
Grant, when it comes to the starting pitching staff, if the Braves don't make a move in the next 15 minutes or so, do you feel that it's because Reynaldo Lopez avoided the IL and it's because Max Fried should be back soon?
Yeah, it's both of those things. And I feel like, obviously, the big picture, I mean, the biggest piece of that is the health of those two guys that would keep you from needing to go out and get involved in what, if you start to look around at the starting pitchers that were getting traded, a lot of fringe guys, a lot of fours and fives, and also pitchers that have either been kind of in that DFA limbo, perhaps, or would be very soon, or coming off the injured list. This has not been a who's who of, like, top of the rotation arms, at least not yet. And we could find out in the next 15 or so minutes. We could also find out with deals that trickle through after the deadline, the same way the first Jorge Soler deal did 3 years ago. But I haven't really seen any starting pitcher that moved that, you know, was a price tag that I thought the Braves should be out there looking to pay that. If you're getting Max Fried back and if Reynaldo Lopez avoids the IL, then you consider that you do have A.J. Smith-Shawver, you do have Ian Anderson, you do have Bryce Elder. I mean, there is some depth there, rather than go out and overpay for somebody who might be exactly like one of the other three guys I just mentioned.
I know we were waiting to see if the White Sox, there's a couple of players, the Dodgers with Flaherty, waiting to see if Crochet is going to get traded. Maybe that happens here in the next 15 minutes or so. But one thing for certain, Grant, when Chris was going through the names, as Grant McCauley joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline, the list of names, it's a lot of guys, unless you're hardcore baseball, they're setup guys, they're role players. You know, we saw the, you know, Philly's got a closer, Yankees got a starter, Yankees got Jazz Chisholm, we saw him pay some dividends. I get it. I'm not expecting the Braves to mortgage what's left of the future because there's not as many assets down there in the minors, but do you feel, I mean, the guys were asking me, like, what should we expect from Luke Jackson? I mean, is he, Luke Jackson even going to be on this roster?
Yeah, no, he definitely will be, and that's just one of those, I think, just trying to find another piece that might be able to help you out, because there have been, you know, a couple of cracks here and there in the pitching staff. Obviously, I'm talking to you the day after Grant Holmes went out and gave a fantastic spot start, and then the Braves bullpen, kind of the lesser arms, let that game completely get away. Now, the offense also didn't do what it needed to do to win against Milwaukee last night, but just kind of looking at ways that you could add just a little bit more depth. I don't know that the return of Tyler Matzek was anytime imminent. I haven't heard any updates on when that would have been happening. So this was moving a piece and then getting somebody who's had a very good July, Luke Jackson has. So that,
right,
obviously, getting somebody who's pitching well and then somebody who's hitting well, like Jorge Soler, I think that was kind of the design of these moves, just to at least signal to your team that we're out here trying to find you some help in a couple of different spots. This, the Soler deal, obviously, he's the big part of it. But I think Luke Jackson could play a role here as well, even if he's not going to be in charge of the same kind of high-leverage spots that he was last time around.
And you mentioned Soler. So Soler bats leadoff. So conceivably, we could have Soler,
so,
Rosario, and Duvall as your starting outfield until we get Ronnie Harris back.
You definitely could, and it's a strange, strange world we're living in because none of those guys were obviously on the Braves. I don't even know if they were on the Braves' radar when they reported for spring training. You had Eddie Rosario eventually signing with Washington. Adam Duvall found his way back to Atlanta at the very end of camp. And then obviously the Soler deal. Don't think we're going to see Jock Peterson coming over. The Arizona Diamondbacks seem to be pretty firmly in the buyer's camp. So not going to get everybody back in there. But, yeah, it's a strange thing that what's old is apparently new again.
Grant, when it comes to looking at the future and the rest of this season, as the Braves continue to make their way through and scrap and fight and claw, but they still remain the number one wild card spot, I just wonder if, even if they do make another move, exactly where they stand in the pecking order right now, because I need to see more from Riley, who's turning it around, Olsen, who's turning it around, Arcia looks like he might be turning it around. But at what point do you feel like the sample size would allow us to be more comfortable with the results that we've seen of late?
I mean, they just have to keep doing it. I think that's really the simplest answer I can give you. I mean, clearly you wanted to see some signs. And again, and I said this yesterday, not to, you know, jump all over this point, and I certainly am not trying to jump on Mike with it, but Austin Riley has been swinging the bat so well over the past month and a half that I know he had an awful first couple of months, but I kind of have separated him from guys who need to figure it out at this point. I do think that it's squarely Matt Olson. And you know, the other thing is you can kind of tell that Matt Olson knows it as well. He wants to get things turned around because they need him in the middle of the order to be the guy, not that hits 54 homers every year, but that is a slugger, a run producer, the way that he has been throughout his career. You throw Jorge Soler at the top of the lineup, a guy who has been getting on base. Maybe you're finally able to set the table for Austin Riley. I mean, we've seen a lot of solo home runs, and that's, you know, it's great that the Braves are hitting home runs, but not as many with runners on base, and that's something that they've got to solve. So, yeah, you can look at Olsen as a guy that needs to turn it around. You need more out of your other outfielders. You need a lot out of, I think, out of Michael Harris when he comes back. I think Travis d'Arnaud and Sean Murphy have been swinging pretty well. D'Arnaud's been getting a lot of playing time, though, lately, which to me is at least a little bit curious, but I don't know. Maybe you just ride the hot hand and split that playing time down the middle for the time being. But Orlando Arcia also could help you out by swinging better, but I just don't feel like the onus is on him. Really, it comes back to pretty squarely on Matt Olson. If you're going to get this lineup clicking the way that it needs to, you need the guy who's supposed to be batting cleanup to become a run-producing machine again, and he's capable of doing it, and maybe what we've been seeing lately are signs that he is starting to figure it out.
It's just so hard to get, you know, get a handle on this. You talked about Austin Riley kind of out of the weeds. The OPS was 613, you know, back in May, and then the average jumped to 289 back in June, and then we get to July, he's batting 253. So, I mean, still the 14 home runs and 42 RBIs. To your point, guys have to be on base to knock him in, and the leadoff role has just been completely obliterated since Acuna's injury. So I guess all we can do is, and I guess the answer, Grant, that's, I know we come to this conclusion, guys, do your job and hit. You know, Arcia, maybe that's a spark. He crushed one last night. Ozuna continues to do what he's been doing all season long. By the way, that's one of the hardest, farthest hit balls I've seen in that ballpark last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that he hits them in places where a lot of other guys would just have to buy a ticket to deliver a baseball out there. But, you know, we've got, you know, the bright spots of it, of this lineup, have been few and far between. But Marcell Ozuna has been kind of a beacon of light, the North Star, whatever you want to call him in terms of, you know, being the best that the Braves have had to offer this year. It is just still, even at this point, you know, putting aside, and I talked a lot about this on From the Diamond this Sunday, or this past Sunday, you have to put aside 2023 because that is last year, and the numbers do tell you where you are this year, but it is still surprising to see the Braves regress the way that they have, and it's still difficult, despite all of these numbers and the sample size that you're asking about, Chris, to think that, well, they can't play any better than they have. Surely they can. We just got to see them go out there and do it because, as the old saying goes, seeing is believing.
The other thing is last night, and maybe we've been so focused on the Phillies, taking Milwaukee for granted. I mean, that was a 2-1 game. Grant Holmes did a fantastic job last night.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Chavez didn't have his A game. And then Milwaukee just drops the hammer on you, and they do that to a lot of people.
Yeah, they do. They're a club that has fought this year to take over the National League Central. They haven't really gotten pushed by anybody. They did just lose Christian Yelich for who knows what period of time, so that's obviously not going to help them out. But even though they've traded away Corbin Burns, they continue to show that they've got enough pitching to be a contender. And even in a post-Craig Council era, this is a club that can hang around. They may not get all of the money dumped on them like some of the other contenders do, but they're a club that it seemingly they're always there. They find a way to be in there, and they find a way to be, you know, a kind of a pesky club, if nothing else. And so, yeah, the Braves need to handle their business, get on home, because we're going to be seeing a very different Miami Marlins team this weekend because they just continue to make trade after trade after trade. And that's a series that I don't know if I need to say this, but I'll say it anyway. The Braves need to take at all costs.
Yes.
Grant, when it comes to the biggest name in this market, we just got some breaking news from Ken Rosenthal. Garrett Crochet of the White Sox will not be traded. Now, I want to ask you how that relates to the Braves here, because we talked about it at the beginning of the interview. The Braves right now really don't even have the type of prospects you would think to bring back that type of arm and then even pay him what he would want to be paid. What is the state of the Braves farm system right now? Maybe even looking towards next year's trading deadline as the Braves would look to maybe revamp again. I just wonder what the state of it is, because the days of the Dansbys and the Freddies being in the pipeline are gone.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been a long time ago, and even since those guys, you've had guys come along that have been very useful, if not great major leaguers, the most recent of which, obviously, a couple of years ago, you had Michael Harris and Spencer Strider come out of a farm system that was ranked in the high 20s in Major League Baseball. You just never know what might be down there. And all these clubs, they assess their talent differently than all the publications and websites that all of us are kind of pouring over and reading and trying to make our best judgment on. So I think that they have done a really nice job the last couple of years in particular of restocking in arms. They're also able to sign international prospects again, which was not the case for the duration of that ban that they were handed in late 2017. Those things in concert can help the Braves get back to having a higher-ranked farm system. Right now, most publications, I think, they're somewhere in the middle of the pack. That's a market improvement over being 27th, 28th, the way that they have been in some recent years. So I think they might be, even at this point, a little bit underrated, even though they may not be the most surprising and exciting names across all of baseball when it comes to prospects. It's right. Still a better farm system, and we've seen Alex Anthopoulos do more with less in the past.
Before we cut you loose, Grant, the Phillies, they got the hitting. They've just been tearing the cover off the ball. They pick up Tanner Banks, left-hander from the White Sox, so a guy they can use in a relief role, maybe as a starter on a six, if they go to a six-man down the stretch. So Phillies kind of doing the money moves. We lose Matzik real quick, just his legacy. I know that, 2021, we talked a lot about Soler, what he means. Matzik was part of one of the greatest bullpens of all time, wasn't he?
Yeah, not only that, but I said this on social, and I'll stand by it. As far as moments that I have witnessed in the history of the Braves franchise, Tyler Matzik authored one of the top ones you could ever ask for. You can go to thousands and thousands of games and not see a moment like that. And he stood up there and got into a serious jam and got out of it for Luke Jackson, nonetheless,
right.
To close out that Dodgers series and close out that Dodgers the Dodgers' best opportunity to get back in that NLCS, an unforgettable moment for him. And speaking of the Dodgers, they just got Jack Flaherty from the Tigers, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN.
That's a huge move.
That's a big one.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, we figured that was coming. So the Dodgers keep on doing what they're doing. We'll have to wait and see if there's any more action for the Braves, but Grant kind of said our team is on the field. Grant, if it does break, something pops, we'll get back to you, man. The six, thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Grant McCauley there. And, yeah, man, unbelievable, man. You take it back to the 21 NLCS. Mookie Betts, Albert Pujols. Remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, Goosebumps City, that amazing run, which culminates with Ray Soler in the home run into the night in Houston. Now he's back. See if we can go home again. We'll come back. Look at the top three. Tell you what's going around the NFL. Coming to the six, what NFL wide receiver says we're the worst fans?
Ugh.
Live at Hooters Mall of Georgia. Hooters, baby. Come on, join the party.